Off we go.
Good morning, everybody.
Everybody, good morning. So
literally everybody.
Yeah.
We have an ever-growing audience now.
Yeah.
I mean, the stats on iTunes. The first episode was very popular.
You're kidding, right?
No, it was the second.
On iTunes?
Yeah, there's this little bar going how popular the episode is. They don't go with, they don't say the numbers, but I guess they...
It's like five or so. Or maybe two digits even. That would be crazy.
Nuts.
Yeah, today we will go over, how do we phrase it, by the way? We go about the conceptual aspects of stream processing.
Yeah, basically we mentioned an article in the last episode.
You mentioned an article.
I mentioned.
I have nothing to do with it.
In the last episode where we said that we're going to talk about this blog post, and actually, we did some homework.
Yes, we did.
We added, Christian added a site.
Oh, wait, yeah. Yeah.
And so now we have a URL where you can go to. Oh, it's the same URL, basically, right?
Right. And I stole it from Arrested DevOps. They have a Yugo page, and I just stole it and I changed it, and I put it on GitHub, and the website is under the old URL.
And we put in some show notes, which don't actually qualify as real show notes. It's just that we have written something down to get us the right Stichwörter.
Yeah.
And so we put this on the side, and lately, so the latest thing will have the URL to this particular blog post we are talking about today. And it's highly recommended that you read it by yourself because, I guess we're just picking some aspects out of the whole blog post where we think that's really interesting to us.
Yeah, but this is a pity, right? So if we talk about it now for an hour or so, and then you won't read it again because you know, like, the basic stuff about it because you heard this awesome podcast.
Yeah, but there are also like additional links in the blog post.
Yeah, that's true.
You may want to like it's a good experience, and for me it's one of the best and shortest summarization of like the whole landscape about the basics and foundations of stream processing. And
I think the gate is a little bit too high.
You think?
Yeah,
but I'm sitting right in front of the mic.
Yeah, I will open it up a little bit more. So, exactly. It's a very nice blog post. And on the second blog post where he talks about the implications and examples, he also has some nice visualizations, video style, where you can see the windowing in action and so on. So, for this, at least, it's very recommended to scroll through the second blog post at least.
Yeah, and the guy is called Tyler Aki Dao, if I say it correctly.
Is he Brit or?
Tyler. I mean, he's a Google guy.
He's a Google guy.
And he was working on the Google Stream processing effort that is now contributed to the Apache or hand over to the Apache Foundation. It was the last one we mentioned in the last episode. This general effort where you abstract your stream processing problem with this framework from Google, and then you can choose your execution engine. So you can say I run in Spark or I run in Flume or something like that. That was this guy. So maybe we just start, and I will go through some things I highlighted in the beginning, and then I guess one big point for you is the time differentiation.
Oh yeah, I like this very much.
So you can, once we are there, it will be a bit longer and it will be a bit boring.
What will be boring?
We are just citing the PDF. We are not like making jokes like the last time.
Yeah, but we can.
No, it's not allowed today. We don't have any jokes.
Why not?
It's just a boring podcast.
Okay. Damn it. No laughing.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, okay.
So how do we kick off?
Yeah, I'll just start with the first thing, and that's like terminology. And we mentioned that before in other episodes, but we just, this should be just go on forever from beginning to end, mentioning all the things.
Yeah, okay. So we start with the background, yeah. So terminology, capabilities, and time domain. Okay, what's a terminology? Why is it even in this blog post? Why should we talk about it?
Because it's it often gets confused between stream processing and streaming data, and everybody uses every term in exchange and synonym-wise, and that's just not correct, I guess.
But the podcast is called Insert Buzzword, so that's completely our thing. But not for today.
Yeah. Okay. So we talk about terminology, we talk about capabilities, and we talk about time. And I have created a
put your microphone a little bit higher. I mean, it's a podcast, you cannot see it, but
so apparently I'm stupid enough to put the microphone right in front of my eyes, so I can't read.
Yeah, but you can hire it here.
Clever. Yeah, I'm a Java developer.
Yeah, so that's actually, you already said it, right? So we have to be precise with our terminology, otherwise we are getting into deep, deep trouble.
So in terms of streaming, we will define, or he defines it, Tyler defines it, as a type of data processing engine that is designed with infinite data sets in mind and nothing more. So again, a data processing engine that is designed with infinite data sets in mind. That doesn't mean it processes infinite data set, and it doesn't mean it doesn't say anything about batch or algorithm or precision. It's just data processing. And when I was designing the system, it was clear to me that my data set may be unbounded. So what are unbounded data? An unbounded data set is a data set that is ever growing, and for real, it is infinite. We mentioned that in the last time, but we can, like, if you monitor systems, it's very unlikely, or it would be a very unhappy event if all your systems do not report metrics anymore. So you can say that the metrics stream from all your boxes that you operate are infinite, because you want them to run infinite, and they should report infinite data about their health and how they are doing. So that's an unbounded data set. It will have a start, and that's like just the genesis of it, like the beginning of the stream, but and if you fall over, you may not be able to process the data set anymore, but the data set is, per definition, it's infinite. Some complaints?
Yeah. No, I just fiddle around with the gate because I type the show notes. Mm. And as I type the show notes, I don't want the listeners to be too much distracted from my typing noise. And I think now it's still a little bit too... Let's say we put it like this. Looks still okay. We can hear it.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, so, already...
And now, next term would be unbounded data processing. So that's like, we have unbounded data, and now we do processing over these unbounded data, which we defined as stream processing. So an ongoing mode of data processing applied for aforementioned type of unbounded data. What's wrong?
Yeah.
You think
it's a little bit hacked, so I have to put the gate a little bit down again.
Yeah, you have to.
I think my microphone is
more sensitive?
More sensitive. Or maybe here we have some.
Yeah, if your gain is higher than mine, that would be an explanation.
Oh, level. So everything is the same.
Oh.
Oh no.
Now you're now.
One, two. What's it?
What?
The second one is mine, right?
No.
Sure, you put yourself in the first.
Ah.
1, 2, 3. Yeah, that makes sense because my gain was too high. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. Okay. Yeah. Aha. That makes sense. Yeah, that's good.
That's better now?
Ah, I like it. Oh. If I type. Oh.
Now you can raise the headphone volume, please. For me. Thank you.
Yeah?
Yeah. Very good. So, unbounded data, unbounded data processing. Ongoing mode of data processing applied to unbounded data set. Low latency, approximate, and speculative results.
What's this? I'm not sure that I understood it completely when I read this.
So, PDF. The good thing about low latency is that we can process a huge amount of small, tiny data in a really fast fashion using X amounts of boxes, processing units, CPU cores, memory. So we don't, we take the fastest hardware we can get and just apply it to our infinite or unbounded data set. So approximate and speculative results, that's historically, like, and he makes, like, he inverts the problem here in his blog post. He's saying that just because that batch processing systems were not designed with approximate or speculative results in mind, doesn't mean that they are not able to do that, which is exactly the opposite. You don't want to have approximate or speculative results. And we will see why that is in like, it comes up in the blog post. So approximate is just like, so for instance, I sum up X amount of data and I get only 50% of the values of all existing data. I have a speculative result because basically I have never seen 50% of all the data sets. So I'm just, my result is just approximate or speculative. So, and now I can, like, if I place algorithm that we have this statistical probability data, probabilistic data structures we mentioned in the buzzword podcast episode,
mm-hmm.
You can estimate. You can just compute a statistic over a sample and then estimate the precise value. So, and that would be a speculative approximate result. So it's, you know, it's not the correct number, but it's near to the correct number.
And because correct is hard, and you don't want to do hard.
Well, we will get there.
Like the NP versus...
No. It's just, have I seen all rows in my database, and can I make an exact number by just... what? That's what... We will get there. It's a batch.
Okay.
So it's just saying that traditionally, streaming processors have been... sold with like, you get really low latency results, but then the results are speculative. And that was really what, like, it has to do with the delivery semantics, actually. So now streaming is an execution engine designed to handle these unbound data sets, and I guess that's all we need for the terminology. So, we have an unbounded data processing, we have unbounded data, and streaming processing would be the application of a unbounded data processing engine on top over unbounded data set. So going back to the history, and I talked a lot about this already in former episodes, so the first thing was this Lambda architecture, which Nathan Maas proposed. And he basically said that we have these two pipelines that do exactly the same thing. The one thing is working as a batch processing engine, and the other one is a stream processing engine, basically calculating the same stuff. And that was...
But one with correctness and one without.
Right. So the stream processing part of that pipeline would be approximate. It will, and that means we don't care actually if we get all the if we get exactly once delivery. We just care that we process all incoming events as good as we can and as fast as we can, meaning we allow some incorrectness or error in the result. What's wrong today?
Yeah, this shared... How can I make this? But continue, please. Like, just
no.
My annoying self.
No, I have my breakfast.
Ah, that's the wrong...
I guess this episode will be very annoying to listen to.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. First, we use the Windows first. That pisses me off in the first place, because it doesn't have the dynamic gate thingy, and it sounds ugly, and Hagen was not happy with it, so we switched back to GarageBand, but we will go to Ultrashall someday.
Yeah, the stream, yeah, because you bought it.
No, I didn't buy it yet. Still evaluating.
Okay, I think it's falling under the floor.
Yeah, but sorry, so the thing is that you have this two... processors.
Yeah.
One is batch, one is streaming.
Yeah.
And the streaming one is the, like...
It's the fast one, low latency, you get all current results immediately, basically, or just in a millisecond or sub-second time frame. And the batch process will give you the exact results, right? Because now, if you see like that, if you have a file and you have all the rows and you go over all rows and add up the sum of some value, once you're done going over this batch, you have the exact number.
Yeah.
There's, like, it's really, like, unfortunate if now you have a CPU error or something, if you don't come to the exact right sum of your numbers.
Yeah. So,
but
so
because of distributed stream processing, that's much harder to feed and go to the exactly once delivery, so that you see every event exactly once, and then you have the exact result. So the storm processing has at least once semantics, at most once, at most.
So you can lose some.
Yeah, it may be happening that like you see one of you lose events.
Yeah, I thought that we should. Oh, I would like to use DocDriveNow here as an example in Berlin. So
DriveNow?
Yeah.
The service from BMW.
Yeah. So with this low latency, inaccurate results thingy, you would just say, okay, I saw like 50 guys driving in this upcoming hour that we currently are in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like half an hour has passed. So I think that we will have 100 at the end.
That would be estimated. So you have some kind of logic that goes and makes a regression going, half the time is over, that's my data set, basically averaging it and go, okay, in the next half, when I saw 30 minutes of these, the next 30 minutes will be the same. You make an assumption that this is a linear correlation, and then you get into...
So it's one step too far. So with this streaming system, you would say, the last hour, we had 50.
Yeah, and counting then, all the events in the
world. And maybe you missed something because there was something that you didn't catch. And when the batch processing is over, it's the old dude in the corner. He has a very sharp pencil and he will go through the numbers.
But it takes time to just add up all rows you ever seen.
Yeah. Okay, and then you have this two, and then you have to... You totally trust what the batch processor gives you, and you don't trust what the stream processor
gives. In the book Nathan Maas was writing, he has another step that goes, we use the batch system to create one view, we use the stream processing to get the near real-time view, and then we have a merger that merges the exact results with the approximate results, and then we put these into the final view.
Okay.
That was proposed in the book.
Why couldn't we just rely on the batch system? I mean, why?
Because we have a high latency. So we go and add the current hour of events to, say, HDFS. Or make it simple, we add it to HDFS in sequence files, and we put the same hour into Kafka and in front of Storm. So we add to the batch. Now the batch needs to go, say, DriveNow is 2 years old or 4 years old. The batch processor will now start and aggregate over 4 years worth of data, moving maybe terabytes around.
Mm.
That will take some hours. So the exact results for now is expected to be computed in some hours in the future. Yeah. While with Storm, we can go, give me everything you've seen so far, or just ran the batch in an infinite loop, give me the latest results and store it here. And we go, okay, this result comes from all 4 years until T minus 6 hours. And we will have the 6 hours that we are missing in the batch processing, we will have that aggregate in Storm. Now we go and add together the results from all the history with the last 6 hours from Storm. Mm. And that would be our final result.
So x plus y and off you go.
Yeah. Is that, except that this delta that Storm provides is an estimate.
Yeah. And x, so the batch part will...
Well, it's not an estimate. An estimate would be if there is some probability computation going on. It's just roughly good enough. It's approximate. It's,
and when time passes, the x will become closer to... Or maybe it will lag behind anyways. Any time it will lag behind, but... Sometimes it's bigger, so it has little lag, and sometimes it's like, okay.
The problem with that is, like, it boils down to what Storm, in this case, provides for delivery semantics. It says, I'm losing messages, which also says the final result cannot be correct. It's just...
Yeah, that's why they call it a
problem. You may get lucky and see all the events, you have no errors whatsoever, and your result is exact.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantee that this is the case.
Okay, and the very ugly part of this system is that you need to have two pipelines.
You have all the management that's going on with two pipelines. You duplicate the code because a map reducer logic will look different in Java than a bold spout logic that you would program for Storm. So you maintain two code bases for the same problem, which is really unfortunate. That's like, again, like, don't repeat yourself. Man.
I don't get the share.
Yeah. And maybe you just sit on the floor.
Okay. Yeah. So that's ugly.
Yeah.
That's what we don't want. So
yeah, well, that's not ugly. It was a very good idea for that time. Everybody had, like, its huge HBase or Hadoop cluster, and... everybody was kind of like, we can process this, and was kind of disappointed with the time it takes to get to some results.
But that was the first iteration, but there was some guy.
Yeah, right. So Jay Crapes from Confluent.io, he made a blog post where he questions the Lambda architecture and came up with something that he called Kappa architecture, but that I guess that's just a term, but we will have that forever, and it will be picked up as a buzzword. It basically says that we can, and what we propose also is, like, you can basically use Kafka to build a single pipeline and create a system around this append lock that Kafka provides, distributed append lock that's scalable horizontally. I don't know how you would say it. And that changed a bit the thing, because first of all, you have the chance to get rid of, like, having two different processing pipelines, and it makes things a bit simpler, because you don't differentiate anymore between batch and streaming, because you can define batch within streaming.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, that's just one offset to the other offset defines a batch.
Yeah.
But you cannot model streaming in terms of batch.
Yeah, we already talked about it last time, I think. Yeah. So you can make a batch out of everything, because you could say, okay, when the hour is full, then we just define the last hour as one batch. And we...
Right. And so Taylor, in his blog post, gives kudos to Flink for taking the idea and building a system that is all streaming under the covers, and even in batch mode, it uses stream processing, basically.
Yeah.
Now, with regard to the correctness, So Tyler is saying that correctness boils down to a consistent storage. Streaming system need a method for checkpointing and persisting state over time. And I don't think that the credits here are valid for Krebs, because I think it was actually Martin Kleppmann who came up with that in the SAMSA system, where he goes, every SAMSA processor needs to have local state and has a key value store where he stores his state, and then this state gets replicated back to Kafka. So in terms of a failure of a particular processing unit, you can replay the state. But Tyler gives the props here to Krebs. It's I do mind. Actually, otherwise I wouldn't have mentioned it. But anyways,
whoever get the tip of the head.
The idea is nice, and we mentioned it also. Is you have this local state that is interchangeable, basically, or replayable if you want. So with this in mind, you can get to exactly once delivery semantics. The problem we have currently is that still most of the processing systems, also the one that we mentioned in the last episode, are at most once processing, which means you see it once or never. Is that right? No, I will always get confused. At most once. Either you see it or you never see it.
Yeah,
that's you see it one time or never.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So
you like it?
At most once delivery for my work. So like maybe I do it, maybe not. It's like very I mean, I think the example where it is okay-ish is if you like count something that you really you click on something and you want to make a purchase.
Yeah.
And if you don't see this event, I mean, hopefully you're at most once is not most of the times you don't. If it's like 10% of the time it's not delivered, then the user will click again if it's not coming up in his.
You can solve these problems on a business side by designing your business differently and handling these cases.
Or is it like 1% of the time, and every once in a while a user clicks on a purchase button and it's not popping up in his cart, then he will click again.
Yeah,
but what you don't want is he clicks and then 10 times.
Yeah, the other thing is like if you have like, for instance, a metric going your key performance indicator, and it goes and says, we are very good now, and in the next hour it goes, it's a complete catastrophe. Like you say, 100 is very good, and 0 is very bad, and you stay with, 90 during the whole day, and then you have 1 hour where it goes 0.
Yeah, because no
events, like you have a network partition, and now you as a technician will understand what's going on, but your boss maybe thinks and sells all his options at once and tries to kill someone.
But
or
then
someone.
You can purchase.
You can cheat it with that. But that's bad.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, to have like strong consistency, meaning for every hour during the day or for every X, really matter, or it's like up to the definition of windowing, which comes later. The precision you can make for your values that you compute is consistent over time, meaning that you don't have like an error regarding network partition. You don't have, or you're not having an error. That's the thing. You will always have to deal with this scenario, so you can get a value for your unprecisionness or your wrongness, if you will. So if you go with exactly once delivery, you can be sure that you have, when you do a sum over something, that's exactly the same result that the batch system would come up with, because you saw every event in the same way that the batch processor saw every event.
Yeah, and it's a gold standard anyway, right? So exactly once, that's what you want. Yeah, okay, cool.
So about the strong consistency thing and the exactly once delivery, there are two papers he mentions. The one would be Millwheel and Spark Streaming, and both papers spend a significant amount of time discussing this consistency issue. It is really important, and yeah, maybe you are interested in looking into these papers. So the next thing, and now we can maybe hand over, is the reasoning about time. So you want to have these, you want to be clear about the skew or the shift you may get with regard to event and processing time in terms of unbounded or unordered data. Unbounded, unordered data of varying event time is a very challenging problem in stream processing, actually. So you can have, I don't know, you want to take over? And
yeah, just wanted to put the two links here in the show notes. Let me just,
we can have the event time, which is basically the time when an actual event occurred. So, and we will have the processing time, that is the time a processing system sees the event in its system.
Yeah, for our node DriveNow example, so for DriveNow is a shared car sharing service here in Berlin from BMW. Anyway, so you can like book a car, get in there, drive around, and then you just hop out, park the car, and then you will be charged according to the minutes you spend in the car. And let's imagine that you have no network coverage where you drive with this car. So the car will store events locally, and once it has coverage again, then it might send the events to your stream processor, right? So the time the event actually occurred is then different from the time, or it will be different anyways any time, but the event time, so the time the event actually occurred, will be much different from when the event is observed by the system. So this is the difference between event time and processing time. So the time occurred, like let's say at 1 p.m., but you were not able to send it to the system. So when you get coverage again at 1:10, for instance, then the system will receive this event, and the processing time will be 10 minutes later than the event already occurred. And this is true for logs and for metrics as well. So you don't want to rely on the processing time only. You want to know when within the data structure you have event time also. And we talked about this in our very, very first German podcast, but we will iterate on it here. Yeah, and in systems as well, not only in the real life example that we have, like if you have shared resources or your network is congested or your shared CPU is busy, then you will have a little skew, or maybe a bigger skew even, in your overall IT system. So you have to send data from one point to the other, as you always have, and the receiving end is busy, or the sending end is busy, and will pause a little bit until when it sends the data. Then you have the skew, and there is a nice picture even on the blog post where he has the event time on the x-axis and the processing time on the y-axis, and the ideal would be that this vertical line from the horizontal, the how is it called, diagonal line, is that the processing time and the event time is always the same, but that's obviously not the case like most times. So busy times, the event time will be, or the processing time will be later than the event time, and so on. So the picture is not something for a podcast, but you can imagine. Like, as I said, you would drive through a non-covered area, then it will store the events locally and then send it. The processing time will be there for later. Or other good example that he puts in this blog post is people on an airplane in fly mode. They will create events on their phone all the time, but since they are not on the network, they cannot send it. And when everyone or when they come out of the airplane and put off the airplane mode, then they will just send all the events that they assembled. Before. And then you don't want to rely only on processing time, but because it will show you that you have all these events coming in at the same time, basically, and it will give this interpretation about when the event actually occurred. Yeah, that about processing and event time. Now we are diving into processing, data processing patterns, right? This is, this learning path you had to, highlighted.
So it's again, what we saw is the basic assumption you can make, and that there is, you need your unbounded data set, you need your unbounded data processing, now you have stream processing, then you have the notion of time, that is clear that you need to differentiate between when does something happen and when is the time that you process the thing that happened. And there are natural scenarios in our world where this is highly skewed or not in order. So you need to deal with events, or just call it events, that come unordered and skewed and are maybe missing. So if you go with processing time, you can for sure say that you will miss some events. So if you go and say, I count everything for the last hour with my processing time, it's very likely that in the case of the plane or outages of the local network, you will not get all the events in that time window when you process it. Using windows for processing time is very simple to implement, but your data is definitely not consistent and will not be right.
But this depends on your use case for the data, right?
We will get there.
We will get there.
So when you try to do the windowing over event time, you need to handle this situation where you have, this is the 10th hour of the day, and for the 10th hour of the day, I get a bunch of events in the 14th hour of the day. So how do you deal with that? You can cache them, and there are different ways to get around this, but you need to know that for some things you can just not, you might just miss events. So you need to be aware of that, and then you need to express your error rate if you want, or it's actually the same if you go from say radio or TV transmission over the air, there's always this signal to noise ratio. Like every sending channel introduces a noise. If the noise gets too high, you have no signal left that you can use. And that's just natural to processing information, I guess. Information theory. It's not new, it's just that in terms of streaming processing, we were not spoken that open about that fact. But like the fact that you have information going from A to B, and that this transmission from A to B, and that also means like I have this one raw value and I want to have this aggregate value, is also like transportation of information. So when you do transport information from A to B, you will have to deal with the fact that there might be errors. It's just now that this becomes more obvious over the time.
Is it this information to signal to noise?
No, it's just an analogy that I imagined this morning when I was reading.
But is it correct?
No, the one is like we have now here discrete information segments, like data is like digital data, where a signal, an analog signal across the air for, like, say, amateur.
Yeah, but amateur radio, but in this case, the signal, or you send some information, and you know exactly how long this information will be on air until it reaches you, and this won't change because air is like the and then you have noise that comes from other people sending as well, so you do not know if you receive random garbage or if you have enough clearness in the signal.
Yeah, that's the signal to noise ratio.
Yeah, but in our case, we do not know if we receive everything that is interesting in our view. So, like, if we have late incoming,
but as a receiver of the signal, you don't also know if something. Maybe the analogy is like, don't be like on a technical level, that doesn't work. It's just that on an abstract level, sending information somewhere introduces an error, and you need to be aware of it and cope with it and make it like measurable. How faulty are you? How, like, what is happening to you in case of
Aware that you have error.
So there is not a predictable mapping between processing time and event time, and it depends. It just depends on the scenario and on many different things. So the proposal of attempting a groom unbounded data into infinite batches of information that eventually become complete, we should be designing tools that allow us to live in the world of uncertainty imposed by the complex data sets. New data will arrive, old data may be retracted or updated, or any system we build should be able to cope with these facts on its own, with notions of completeness being a convenient optimization rather than a semantic necessity. So in the olden days of Storm, it was just, yeah, that's your result, go live with it. And everybody was saying, yeah, if we see 100,000 events and we get the sum of 100,000 events, that's exactly the number. And if you say we cannot be correct when we don't have this exact number seeing all 100,000 events, yeah, theoretically you are right, but practically you just forbid yourself to get any information about the last hour because you rely on a batch system and wait until the batch system is done. So rather than saying this is a necessity, you go, this result is for 98% correct. If you can say that, you go, yeah, 98% sounds reasonable. And if you go, this result I just delivered you has a probability of being correct for 10%, you know something is very shitty. So,
yeah, so let's
it's
say
just it's just like the argument here is just make it visible what are the preciseness semantics of your value that you just computed.
Yeah, and we will get there, but imagine we have a system that in our drive now case says, okay, how many ongoing users do we have, or how many people drive with our cars at this point in time, or in the last hour, let's say, and as people are still driving and you do not know if they are still driving or you didn't receive the end of the session, then you just say, okay, so we have a maximum session of 3 hours, and if we are 2 hours into, or let's say we finish the period of time we want to measure how many sessions we have, but we do not know if we still lacking end sessions, the end session events, and we are like 3 hours behind this end session event time window that we looked at, then we can be sure that as we didn't receive the end session, and the longest session can only be 3 hours, this session will have ended.
Yeah, exactly. You can model it, and that it goes into the direction of watermarking.
Yeah, and we will go to that as well. Okay.
But the thing is, there might be events where, the user was not allowed to drive 3 hours, but he did drive for 4 hours, or he stole your car.
Yeah, but then the session is over, and then it's a legal case.
Right. And you can also make like, okay, something went wrong here. You can go, that shouldn't be the case. That's not what we want.
And the closer you come to this 3 hours like watermark, the 3 hours timeout,
yeah,
then you can say, okay, we are more sure and surer about our result because we know that we are close to this finite. And okay, but let's move on. We are already.
I think we do. I think we just do the first one, and then the next one in the next episode.
Or in an episode, in a further episode.
Yeah, in a further episode. Very good.
Yeah, not make this.
That allows us to talk about something different next time.
Yeah, but okay, so, let's move on with data processing patterns.
Data processing patterns? Where are you, man?
Yeah, on page 25. 24, actually.
Oh, I was on page 30 already.
Really?
Yeah.
But we did talk about unbounded data. And
yeah, we did.
Data.
Yeah, and everybody knows now what are unbounded data. And that you can have precise results from batch system. And that sessions may lack the end event, and that you can model this like Christian described it already. So I'm going further on page 30, unbounded data and streaming. Highly unordered with respect to event time and this time school. So yeah, I guess we talked about that also. Now we can classify these processings of unbounded data set with our unbounded processing pipeline in terms of time to into four categories. The one is time agnostic, the other one is approximation, then we have windowing over processing time, and we have windowing over event time. And this is just more the summation and the application, which is what, and we may mention it, but to be precise. So time agnostic processing is where you just don't care about time at all. And a basic scenario would be I filter everything, and so you may send a very complex JSON into your processing pipeline, and you go, I want to have this key value and only that key value, where this value is above 3. It's just like anything that comes out of your data processing pipeline will just be confirming to the filter you applied. It doesn't matter which order is it in. It's just filter doesn't have any notion of the time. Inner joins also. So you, I don't know. Like this example doesn't really work for me, but. So the inner join, you go, I see somebody pushed a select button and selected an item in my catalog, and somebody pushes the purchase button. And you may want to have the like everything that is selected with the purchase, and it's not working because you purchase more than you do one checkout. Yeah, just like two things that come from different sources but depend on each other. You can just join them and then have a buffer and wait for the other event to come and then join them together and send them over. But also here you would need some criteria to clean up your
let's get to our drive now example. So you reserve the car and then you get to the car and you drive.
So you would stay with the reservation until the event happens. Car is like entered from the user, and then you will have to deal with the events where there is the reservation, but the guy never shows up to the car, and
then you have to have some time out.
And now you would introduce like most likely this would be a time that goes reverse, and then you just release the reservation, car. and then.
Exactly. Or you wait for a different event, which is extend the reservation, and then you join this with the reservation event and wait again until the guy claims the car. Okay, that's inner join.
Yeah, so switching the demantics to some sort of outer join introduces the data completeness problem we have talked about. Once you've seen one side of the join, how do you know whether the other side is ever going to arrive or not? So the truth is, you don't. So you have to introduce some notion of timeout, and that's just what you need to deal with.
Let's say outer join, inner join. Where do you see outer join?
Yeah, below figure 6.
Outer join, what would be an example of an outer join?
Now he comes with. Now he doesn't do. He does not provide an image. Yeah, just let's skip over it. I can't explain it now.
Ta-dum.
Ta-dum. Oh, sorry.
So approximate algorithms, that was also mentioned, like approximate top n, which is, yeah, you can have, what was that, this probabilistic data structures where you go and have a min sketch table, and then you take the min sketch k, top k, and store them differently, and you will always emit the top n results, but this is just an estimate where you trade computing time for space and the precision for space. So you are more precise once you use more memory because you can have more samples in your data set. And so these approaches of approximate algorithms have always the downside that first of all, there are not so many approximate algorithms. Then the ones that are there are complicated, and it's not so easy to compose those algorithms to get to new algorithms that you may want to apply to your problem.
But what would be an example? I mean, a stupid example that I can understand it. So, like you say, like you only store the top 100, and from this you derive the top 5 every so often.
So the K-min sketch, or what's that? K-min. And now that's the cluster algorithm. The min sketch does see all of your events, basically, and hashes them. But it purposefully has hash collisions. So you don't exactly know which single event contributes to the sum of something.
Mm-hmm.
And it is wrong by definition, because you sample, but with this hashing algorithm, it will still be the case, the way that this hash functions are designed, that the most important thing you ever saw will be in the first place of your bucket. That's just due to the design of that data structure. That's a fact. So over a time, you can always get the 5n, the first top n in your min sketch hash set or hash table, and you know that by sheer statistical numbers of this data structure, it is the most. These are the events that you saw the most.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't say I saw this particular item 1,000,000 times and the second particular item 500 times.
Mm-hmm.
It just says these are the most important things you saw over the
you don't
time.
Know the count, you just
you know don't know the order. Count. It's just like with the way the data structure works, it's assured that the global ordering stays consistent with terms that's the highest value, that's the second highest value, that's the third highest value. But it doesn't make any, you don't get to the precise number.
But would it be an example, like you have a little Tante Emma Laden, like a little store on the corner, and you want to know who are the top 3 customers, and you do not say over which period of time, but you only store the top 5 as a cache for this outcome of top 3, and then you have a burst of school kids coming when they're in school, or let's say, no, not school kids, like you have tourists every day, and they come in like twice a day, 5 guys, and every day they are different guys, but you have an old lady, she comes in once every day. But since you only store the top 5, you have for each of the tourists, you have 2 in front of it. And the elderly lady drops out of your
That might happen for the short window where they are coming for the 2 times. But on the next day, her count will always be like counting again.
But her count is dropping out because you only store 5.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and then she will get in once. Yeah. So that then she has to count once. And then this 5 guys come in twice and she drops out of the store, so to speak, of the caching. And it will always yield new tourists every day because they came in twice.
Yeah, but only like if you take the bigger window,
Yeah, then if you have
then she will stay on top all the time.
Yeah, because once she is in the top, then she will stay in the top because she will be counted.
Yeah.
Sad story. Shed a tear.
Okay. Approximate algorithms themselves are not are a fascinating subject, but as they are essentially another example of time-agnostic processing, they are quite straightforward to use. Which kind of contradicts the thing that they are complicated to implement, but anyways. So then the next category would be windowing, and we know fixed windows, we know sliding windows, and we know session windows. So fixed windows are a fixed size and temporal length. So say a fixed window over 1 hour. That's just like the hour is over, we start a new window, we collect all the all the events in that hour, and then we make the sum of something. That would be a fixed window. A sliding window is defined by a fixed length and a fixed period. So we go and say our window is 60 minutes long, but we move it every 1 minute, 1 minute further.
Yeah. So you have a store and you want to know how many apples are sold in the last hour. So like from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m.
Like 1 p.m. 10.
Yeah, yeah. But this would be the sliding
window. Last hour, so 12 p.m. 10. And then it goes. In the next minute, the window will be moved by 1 minute. So that's a fixed length and a fixed period. Yeah. And a session, I guess, the most complex thing. An example of dynamic windowing, where sessions composed of sequences of events terminated by a gap of an inactivity greater than some timeout.
But that's also simple, right? I mean, a customer comes into your shop and you want to know how often does he glance at the chocobar. And it's not the window is not a fixed size because it depends on how long the customer stays in there. But if he that's just the window for a particular...
Yeah, but it's very hard to do.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Just easy to explain, hard to do.
Okay.
Often the case.
So you can have these different windowing mechanisms, and now these windowing mechanisms always need to have some notion of time. And now you can say that you can implement this with processing time and with event time, and you can see what's happening. And we basically said it already that in a simple case. And you don't care about the event time, you just do the processing time, maybe even alerting, because for the alerting scenario, you practically, it doesn't matter when the event occurred, because your alerting system for alerting your operations depends on when the alert gets out of the system, and that's actually very similar to processing time. So during a processing time, you have an anomaly with regard to, I don't know, your disk is failing. You won't be earlier alerted when you were looking at the event time, because the alert will only be sent at once it's through the processing timeline. So,
exactly. So
through the processing thing. So in
it
that case,
it would be cool if you have a time machine though, then.
Yeah.
Say okay,
jump me back and bring the disk with you.
Yeah.
And then you switch it before the failure happens.
The rack was burning 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
But you can send an email that is dated 2 hours earlier, and then you can piss off operations. Look, this email.
Yeah, I said so.
Yeah, you received this email 2 hours ago. Yeah, it was sent actually now, but.
Yeah.
No, yeah, sure. No, yeah, that's true.
La-di-da, la-di-da. I'm kind of lost.
So fixed windows or not? No, processing things in the processing time is
very simple to do because it's just a time where you're just at where your machine is, meaning that all your machines in your processing timeline share the same time zone and are clocked in sync, nearly in sync.
Yeah, and you assume if you have the assumption that your clock should be in sync anyways, but if you think that you don't have any contention and it's the delivery is timely and it's not varying so much, then you can even live with processing time all the time, right? So if your metrics and logs arrive in your streaming processing engine within 1 second, and this is consistent and never there is never an outage, I mean, imagine we have an ideal world with ponies and stuff,
yeah,
and rainbows,
unicorns,
then this is totally fine, because yeah, and a lot of
just systems, saying, is there a camouflage unicorn somewhere
with a machine gun? Maybe. Yeah, but there are a lot of systems. That's, by the way, that in this little Go thing that I like so much, Polaroid, and I forked it to call it Kniep Collect now. But anyway.
Yeah, I saw recently tons of commits going to it.
Bam, 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 bam. Yeah. And the first thing I patched in this was make the difference between event and processing time, so that you can collect like for an hour and then send it off, but still have the event time correct. Because then if you want to batch your submission of data,
you can.
Then you can, because the event time will guarantee that the order at the end will be correct. And if you only rely on processing time and you collect 50 or 60 measurements over a minute and then you send it, then you will have 60 measurements with the same processing time. And then it's like, oh,
it's not good. Yeah, the whole data pipeline will go,
Menno. Okay.
So windowing by event time.
That's cool, but has a little drawback that you do not know when the events are coming in. So you have to wait. You have to make a decision when to stop the window and when to say, okay, fuck it. I have
exactly.
F it. I think I have it all, so I close the window now.
Yeah, or you go... Either you introduce an update mechanism where you store like all of your windows and say, I will update those windows for a certain amount of time, say 1 week, and then you recompute them. Then you are back actually the batch processor and stream processor.
It's in public transport, it's the same, right? We drive with a tram and the metro here to our workplace. And if the driver would say, okay, I know that he wanted to be here for this train to use this train, but he cannot wait forever until everyone that wanted to board the train arrived.
Yeah.
Because he needs processing time, baby. And he will just say, okay, guys, I waited for a minute, so now I'm going.
Nobody ever waited for me a minute.
Oh, today, someone waited for me.
Really?
It was closing, it was red already, and then it opened again. And I was waving my hands at the tip of my head.
Really?
Yes, Berlin... Metro driver.
Now that was not a Berlin tram driver.
Yeah, maybe he was
from like he was a Schwabe or something.
Yeah,
one of those nice German people, or from
maybe
Rheinland-Pfalz or something. Some happy guy.
Yeah,
not a Berlin native.
No, maybe not. Yeah. Or he was drunk.
Yeah, that's completely possible. A Berliner Kindle in the morning vertreibt Kummer und Sorgen oder so.
That's how it is.
Yeah. With dealing with the event processing time, actually this, Flink and the Google stream processor. So both have this notion of watermarking. No, that's the machine learning framework. It's we mentioned it the last time. So watermarking means exactly that you go, so for this time, for this processing time, I have seen these event times and I now cut. It's just that everything in that watermark for that event is just...
But watermark is like... This public transport notion is also nice. So you have like 100 seats in your tram, in your metro, and then you say, if I have 50, then I go. If this watermark is reached, I go.
Yeah, right. So if you... Yeah.
But
it doesn't, like, it's nice as a tool for event time, but still, like, the problem is not solved yet. So you can now just go and handle certain different scenarios. So you would go and see, look of 1 year worth of data and go, all right, what's the average or median amount of events I see in over the whole time? And then you make some analytics and then you can estimate your a good enough watermark and say, okay, if I do the watermark here, it's very likely that my precision will always stay on top of like 92 or some high correctness value.
Yeah. So if you say, okay, last Thursday I had...
Basically, you just get a tool with these processing frameworks that allow you to deal with your error. It doesn't solve the problem of events not arriving in time or arriving too late in the pipeline.
Okay, so you have this watermark and then you have timeout, right? So it's like, I want to start at straight 9, but I wait for a minute and if no one, and then I go.
Yeah,
so you might have this two things, like watermark, which triggers you going off when you have reached 50 people in your drum, or you have the trigger that, you do not have 50 guys, but you waited for 1 minute, so let's go.
Yeah, and we are coming to an end. So when you... Huh? Yeah, for the first part. And so with that watermarking, you introduce now the thing that you, when you watermark and you say, I wait a bit longer, you will now need a buffer mechanism. And now this buffer mechanism, or the capacity of your buffer, now defines the precision that you have, that you can allow. You can buffer forever, then you have an infinite storage system. That's nice. Most of people don't have those.
No infinite storage?
Yeah, maybe there's an alien culture who has that, but...
You can just add more.
Yeah, just more. Ah, I know one system that has it. It's AWS. It's MongoDB. You can send whatever you want to MongoDB and it says, yep, stored, but don't ask for it in the future. Yeah, so...
Got it. That's very
human. So the completeness relies on your buffer, right? And in the end, it's sad, but that's just like it is. You need to be aware of the fact that you cannot materialize a very... No, that would be wrong to say in his regard. So he says that the semantics for delivery and the way you do the event time processing or windowing over event time, you can have very accurate results due to the definition of being accurate, which is different when you just use process according to the definition of your accurate precision. I think precision is better. So you have a measurement of your precision, and with the modern stream processors in place, you can tweak on that precision value, but you will not get around the fact that there will be events that just not show up.
Yeah.
But that's the same thing that might happen to your batch processor. So a guy will maybe crash his smartphone on the flight, so he will start a session, and he will never end the session. And that will show up in your batch processor, in your HDFS, as incomplete or wrong data, and it will show up the same way in your stream processing pipeline. So these facts are just there either way. But you can design a stream processing that has the same correctness capabilities that your batch processor with these modern things for watermarking and local streaming state that is repeatable. Replayable and consistent. Yeah, with that, we would go... that was my recap, so he has a recap too. You want to end with his recap, maybe?
Do I?
Yeah.
We talked about definition of streaming, so we have to be clear on this definition, terminology. It's more about unbounded data sets so that we have a constant flow of infinite... presumably like infinite data, and that we, as you said, we exchange or we trade correctness against low latency. So you say we want to have a nearly correct result or an approximate speculative result, but we want to have it faster than we would have to wait until we have the correct result. So I rather have an approximate result before I have the correct result.
Yeah.
Better to know something than to know nothing until we know it for sure. And that with this notion of streaming processors running, or the other way around, so running a batch system on top of streaming processor, we can have the best of both worlds. So streaming processor that can run batch workloads, but it's under the hood streaming processor, I think it is. So we have this correctness. And so, that's superior to the Lambda architecture, where you have two processing engines.
Precise with your definition. Know the difference between processing time and event time. Have a local state for your stream processors that do the aggregates. Be precise with the use case you are in. Like, know if you need processing time. Can you simplify your problem to be only on processing time or only rely on processing time? If you are not, then have this local state. And basically go listen to our last podcast and choose now with that knowledge, choose your stream processor.
We will call it the World Beyond Batch 101, as the blog post is called.
I don't know if we are allowed to do that.
We call it Beyond Batch 101, which is different. Okay,
and we should his name. We should.
Yeah, I have it in the show notes.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
The other announcement would be that Christian is leaving myself because he doesn't like me anymore, and he thinks everything is better in the US of A.
Yeah.
And so I guess we won't have a new episode
until September 20 something.
Yeah, there will be a pause of at least 2 or 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
Or I make my maybe I troll you and just sit here and just cry for 1 hour.
Yeah, maybe. Or you can grab
and then push a new episode.
Or you can grab a guest and record
someone. Ooh. Nice idea. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe you can get a hand on someone.
Mm.
Okay. And we try to to really get next time our ultrashy thing working.
Oh no.
But for now we stick to GarageBand.
Yeah, it's just good enough.
Okay. Guys,
thanks for listening.
Listening.
Bye bye.
Yeah. Bye.